From DeLand DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of January, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the Peoria Civic Center, where I'm emceeing the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association's annual meeting. Coming up, we'll talk not about the IFCA today, but about the marketplace. We'll do that with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Don Day will be here to discuss the weather forecast. He's day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And along the way, we'll look back to an interview that I did with Jackie Fatka about SAF, or sustainable aviation fuel, in November at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. And we'll do all of that on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Because I'm at the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association Conference, I do not have the settlement prices for you. However, I do, when I'm talking with Naomi Bloom, have the closing prices about 30 cents higher for the soybeans, 4 to 5 higher for the corn, and wheat was up around 18 cents. Naomi is now here to talk about these numbers in this first trading day under a new administration. Hi, Naomi. What a Tuesday it's been. Actually, what a Friday and Tuesday it has been. Kind of an interesting MLK inaugural day, holiday weekend, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. So trade anticipating uncertainty over the weekend, just not knowing what the new administration was actually going to do yesterday. Once Trump was sworn in, traders also keeping an eye on weather in South America, where it continues to be a little bit on the drier side for Argentina. But I think today was more about the fact that President Trump did not specifically come out yesterday and call out Canada, Mexico, China by name with specific tariff numbers. Now, he did say that come February 1st, Mexico and Canada were going to see some tariff action, but there was no specific rhetoric towards China right off the bat. So traders took that as hope that maybe there would be a delay on a trade war or olive branches being handed out one way or the other. The result was that corn prices rallying up to the $5 area for the May contract and the July contract, with soybean prices testing recent highs after that surprise bullish USDA report. Wheat finally following along in the wings, pushing higher, also supported by the cold weather throughout the southern plains. So it has been a very exciting first trading day of the week.
Does this change any views you have as to the direction of the marketplace?
Well, I have to say that, of course, with that USDA report from January, the January WASD, that definitely put in a cornerstone for this whole marketplace and the whole first quarter of a little bit more of a supportive tone because of the ending stocks coming down for corn, also for soybeans. But what's interesting is that it feels like the fund money, maybe they're just in general coming back into commodities. Commodities maybe have been cheaper with hopes of interest rate prices eventually going lower. Maybe they're taking money out of some of those higher interest rate accounts and bringing it back into commodities. Or maybe they have a little bit better idea of what's going to be happening in the world with some of their global connections. But in general, where we are right now, we have overbought corn markets, overbought soybean markets. We've got $5 corn here. This is a major resistance level on multiple reasons for corn futures. So it's going to take some immediate bullish news to get the market to go higher from here. And soybeans are also approaching another resistance area as well. So it's going to be touch and go. It's going to be volatile for the next couple weeks. And I think we're all kind of in this new price discovery point trying to understand, where is the demand from here going forward, especially in light of the uncertainty with the new administration and trade and tariffs? And we're trying to get a handle on the weather in South America and how big those crops are or aren't. So it's going to be a little bit of a shuffling for price movement, probably for another week or two, until we just really have a few more of those pieces of the puzzle better understood for what's coming ahead here for us in these markets.
You know, a friend of ours called the move in this marketplace a gift that producers should take advantage of, particularly for old crop. Are you of that mind on corn and soybeans?
Well, with corn market prices now up near the $5 area for futures, and with it being so overbought, funds close to 300,000 contracts long, it will take a significant fundamental reason for prices to go higher than here. I mean, we've rallied almost a dollar now off of the lows from August. So this has been a wonderful, unexpected rally, again, because that January USDA report being such a shocker and supportive, it would make sense for producers to make some cash sales. You know, the one thing in the back of my mind, with President Trump really expressing his desire to United States become more self-sufficient in energy production, crude oil prices worked lower today. And the uptrend channel line was broken. So if crude oil prices start to sink lower, my fear is that eventually that trickles over into ethanol prices. If ethanol prices begin to fall because crude oil or gasoline prices are falling, it makes it a little bit less profitable, of course, for some of those ethanol plants. Maybe that weighs on corn price down the road. So just kind of something to be mindful of. And still uncertainty with the new administration regarding Kennedy and how he might want to go after corn use for corn syrup in food. There were some people saying that it might affect about 1 billion bushels worth of corn. Now, that's something that can't get, in my opinion, implemented immediately because the entire food industry would have to change its recipes, formulas, machinery. But it is something to just be mindful of as well. So bottom line, yeah, sell the corn, make the cash sale. We've had a wonderful price rally here, and it's going to take some big, immediate, fresh, bullish news to justify prices to go above $5.
Do you think that we could end up with oversupply of energy?
Well, I'm wondering if Trump is going to use it as a way to undercut Russia. If we suddenly outproduce Russia and we can sell oil cheaper to India than what Russia's been able to do it, I wonder if he's going to use that as a trade tactic. I wonder, you know, also if we can overproduce, then we can get that strategic reserve filled back up again. So it's going to be a delicate walk, delicate tightrope to know what's actually going to be coming ahead here in not only the weeks to come, but the years to come. And we're back to, okay, what did he tweet about today? How is the market responding to it? And a lot of just uncertainty is what it feels like.
Do you want to make a first step sale in new crop corn or soybeans or wheat for that matter?
Yeah, I think there's some value there. When you look at the December corn chart, we're right up against 460 again. And 460 has been significant resistance for multiple months. And we know that there's going to be 2 to 3 million more acres of corn planted is already the industry guess. So if we have 2 or 3 more million acres of corn planted, that takes that tightness of the 1.5 billion bushel carryout away, and it kind of lets it swell back up closer to 2 billion bushels. So definitely take advantage and start some sales here, because, again, it'll take some big, new, immediate news to get it to go higher from these values. So the big news would have to be in the form of weather in South America on that second crop corn. It would have to come from some kind of a weather issue here this spring or summer on the U.S. crop, or we would need some immediate bullish news on the biofuels mandates here in the United States in order to get this corn price to go screeching higher from here.
Thank you much.
Thanks for having me.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. CoBank, as you may know, is one of the largest private providers of credit to the U.S. rural economy. The bank delivers loans, leases, and other financial services to agribusinesses, rural infrastructure, and farm credit customers in all 50 states. It has a vested interest, therefore, in anything that might improve commodity prices. Jackie Fatka follows the biofuels industry for CoBank. Her expertise lies in ag policy, biofuels, trade, regulations, ag labor, climate smart agriculture, and farm management. I spoke with her at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City last November, and we took up sustainable aviation fuel, sometimes called SAF or SAF. I wanted to know why CoBank, a lending institution, found SAF, a biofuel that can be made from either corn or soybean, so intriguing.
I mean, historically, CoBank has been a major partner as we've built out the ethanol industry over the years. Obviously, as we look forward towards the next generation of biofuels, renewable diesel is come into that picture. But a lot of those renewable diesel plants can also do sustainable aviation fuel. When you talk about the feedstocks that are really viable today for SAF, we're looking at the HEFA process. So our soybean crushers, we've seen a significant expansion within the soy crush space. And as well as, you know, we've got the livestock partners in there too. So, you know, a lot of distaste is sometimes for tallow, but we've got a lot of tallow that we're using, some joint ventures here with U.S. companies that we are partnering with who also have those JVs with Brazil to help bring the tallow in here. So it's a big interest to ours. You know, obviously with commodity prices where they are, everybody's hoping for that SAF to provide that new demand boost. We got a lot of things that have got to come together to really see that industry take off.
When CoBank enters a space like this, is it all through financing?
You know, and I will say my role on the knowledge exchange team at CoBank is to just help research, to help provide some of that insight of where the market is today, where it could go, and what we need to think about as we move forward. And again, the feedstocks, right? I mean, we're not necessarily right now funding any SAF plants, but we're there to come alongside those customers as they're looking at expansion, looking at maybe new opportunities to be in that space.
When you're looking at that space, of course, you talked about tallow. However, corn, soybeans, both would be capable. Which is the primary that you think the airline industry would be most interested in?
Well, today, really, the production cost of producing a HEFA-based a sustainable aviation fuel is much less than the alcohol to jet. And that's really why we're seeing all the SAF that is produced today with the HEFA process. You know, there's some pilot plants for alcohol to jet, but again, it's going to take time. You look back at the ethanol industry, though, it took time for us to improve those efficiencies, improve the over the history of ethanol. It was not economical at the start, but those efficiencies has improved. You know, hopefully we'll get that way with alcohol to jet because we do have a lot of corn that needs to be used. So, but again, that's a longer term outlook. We got to get some of these markets maybe established with the HEFA process today, get those introduced into the airline space, using those lower prices, keeping airlines competitive too, because it does cost more for them today.
So let me make sure I understand this, the difference in those two processes between FAME, I'm guessing, and the HEFA process within the soybean oil or vegetable oil industries.
Okay, so the HEFA process uses same feedstocks as FAME. Alcohol to jet is a totally different process, and they have a total different cost structure. And how you process that down to make your final fuel is what's different, and the cost is quite a bit different without getting too far into the weeds.
Yeah, so just for clarification, the alcohol to jet fuel process is an ethanol process, and the other is a biofuels process. Primarily, we would think about soybeans. FAME is the normal process under which we have produced soy diesel for decades. And then the HEFA process is the process that would be for sustainable aviation fuel. Is it also for renewable diesel?
Yes. And so that HEFA process can toggle back and forth between renewable diesel and SAF. You're seeing more renewable diesel facilities come online that actually could have half of their capacity renewable diesel, half of it SAF. And also, too, as the market drives that, they could actually go more towards one than the other. So say California market needs more renewable diesel, they could produce more renewable diesel. If you start to establish SAF more cost competitive, you have states who come in like Illinois, who does have a SAF bonus per se, right, with their tax structure, you could see more of those plants shifting towards SAF. Again, all of those pieces coming together to push maybe more production into SAF.
The Phillips 66 Rodeo plant in California is, I think, the largest one now in the United States, maybe on the planet. How important is it to have it in place as a driver for sustainable aviation fuel or renewable diesel for that matter?
You know, I think just overall, as going back to the 3 billion gallon goal that the Biden administration had, 3 billion gallons is about 10% of our current use of aviation fuel. we're at 52 million gallons was our first half of 2024. That's a drop in the bucket, right? So we need these bigger plants. We need something bigger than the pilot sales. And so you talked about Phillips 66 Rodeo is a bigger one, right? You got to have more market penetration. And that's where you're going to start to see that when you see these bigger facilities come online.
When you look forward with the change of administration, how do you see this playing out? What role do states play, for instance, California, as opposed to the federal government?
You know, California's got their low carbon fuel standard, which is actually a huge reason why we're seeing more renewable diesel than SAF, because of the fact that it's more profitable to make renewable diesel. Now, they have a 20% cap coming on veg oils that will limit corn and soy oils use in their renewable diesel. But they don't have that cap on SAF. Maybe that pushes a little bit more into SAF in California state, right? Overall, you know, the federal, we're waiting for 45Z, which is a tax credit that's supposed to go into effect January 1. With this new Trump administration, do we see that paused? Probably. How long? We'll wait and see. But there is a little more unknowns on the federal level. So, you know, we might see some states step in. Airlines still have overall goals they're trying to meet. And so, again, market mandates, market decisions versus government mandates. We're going to have to see which one is the greater driver.
The airlines is actually a market decision based on what they believe the whole of the planet thinks about traveling by air and what those airline travelers want from the airlines.
And you're starting to see some airlines who are actually asking if their customers are willing to pay for their emissions. You're starting to see that at the end of your receipts, if you're looking at that. Some are paying for that. I guess, you know, I've heard numbers between 8 and 12% of customers today are making a decision of, hey, I'm willing to pay a higher price. Now, are you willing to pay all of that higher price? Maybe not, but maybe fractions of that. You know, airlines do have their own microscope on them from folks around the world. We may be stepping out of the Paris Climate Accord as a country of the United States, but these same airline companies operate in all these other countries. You look at the EU, they have a 2% mandate. So any of our airlines who are based here that also operate in the EU, they're going to be having to abide by those EU rules. We may start making SAF and shipping it over to the EU to help them meet their mandate as well.
When you look across the regions in the U.S., where do you expect SAF facilities to be located? Usually they're co-located with a refiner, that would put them on the Gulf Coast, probably on the West Coast, unlike the ethanol industry, which built out right where the corn was supplied.
You know, really got to be close to those major airports, right? A big cost of SAF is getting the SAF from the facility just to the airport, right? You know, we look at Chicago Midway's got a partnership there to work with the airline, Southwest Airlines. You got to get it close to that. But in Minnesota, there's camelina producers who are producing a crop, sending it to Montana. Montana Renewables is processing it, and then they're sending it back to Minneapolis and Detroit. Somehow that doesn't seem quite sustainable. So we really probably got to get some of these facilities, refineries close to those airports that are going to use the most of it.
Which brings me back to ethanol. The plants are already located. If you say Chicago, you have the ethanol plant located nearby. I believe there's already a pipeline as well, which is the most efficient way to move this product. Why soybean or vegetable oils rather than alcohol to jet?
It goes back to cost. The alcohol to jet cost, plant producing that final SAF, the costs are just a lot higher. And in our mind, we think it just doesn't make sense. But the cost, how to process that down, how to process the corn kernel down to what is usable and sustainable aviation fuel is a lot different than what is being used. If you think about it too, soybeans aren't the ones that are being processed into your SAF. You got to get a soybean oil that's then processed into it. So those plants have an oil that's already coming in, something that's a little more processed than like your corn kernel that would arrive.
In your crystal ball, when you think about this and the location of those plants near primary hubs, that would put them in Atlanta and Minneapolis and O'Hare for Chicago, New York, likely LAX. Do you see farmers in those areas or other people building out SAF plants? I don't know whether I want to call them refineries, but an SAF plant, much like they built out the ethanol industry in the late 2000s?
I mean, look at where the Georgia LanzaJet plan is, right? I mean, that's our first real alcohol to jet one. I mean, the other one that we are pretty far along on is the Gevo one in South Dakota. You know, LanzaJet's making that choice. Things that are coming in are able to come in off the Gulf too. You might be able to import in things. But in our minds, we want to see rural America thrive, right? So how do we make sure that this is beneficial to all? I think we're going to have to wait and see. I don't know if my crystal ball is clear enough to show me that.
Well, I think my what I was asking was whether your crystal ball was telling you that they were going to have to build a vegetable oil plant for SAF as opposed to a alcohol to jet for SAF.
So the challenge, we do become feedstock constrained with the HEFA process. We have much more potential to make a lot of SAF with our corn versus making a lot of SAF with, say, soybean oil. And so you're more feedstock constrained, which is, again, hopefully we can get that alcohol to jet cost down so that it can be another really big opportunity like the ethanol industry was to really take that to the next level of the production capacity to produce SAF.
Jackie Fatka is a lead economist at CoBank, specializing in farm supply and biofuels. I spoke with her during the November National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. We're celebrating 40 years on the air, more than 10,000 episodes, some 30,000 interviews. Up next, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. In fact, Don, thanks for being with us. What do you have to say about the weather today?
What a January it's been across the nation east of the Rockies, with much, much below normal temperatures and snowfall this week all the way to the Gulf Coast. In fact, there could be snow on the ground before this week's over, from Houston to Tallahassee, then into the Carolinas. Snow all the way down to the Gulf Coast. Quite a strong Arctic wave, obviously, and although the Arctic temperatures will ease a bit, overall, the general trend for the lower 48 states through the rest of the month will be below average temperatures. Snowfall amounts are generally going to be on the light side, as when Arctic air dominates, you don't have a lot of moisture to work with. But we will see a cold end of January, and all indications suggest February will start off that way. So from the plains to the Great Lakes to the Midwest and Corn Belt to the northeastern United States, the chilly winter season will continue. Down south of the equator, well, rain chances are looking a little bit better for Argentina. Over the next couple of weeks, Argentina's growing areas of the north have decent chances for at or above average precipitation. The same goes for the southern states of Brazil. A little bit further north into Brazil, conditions are a little bit drier. Good precipitation expected for Peru, with temperatures across the southern hemisphere in the key growing areas of South America likely to run at or a little bit below average, although warming up a little bit in Argentina. But no one's going to be hot and dry over the next 2 weeks.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. From the Illinois Fertilizer Chemical Association Annual Conference in Peoria, I'm Todd Gleason.